listening to the Daily Gold Podcast, covering precious metals, the junior mining sector, and global capital markets for intelligent investors. Now, here is your host, Jordan Roy Byrne.
Well, hello again, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Daily Gold Podcast. I'm here chatting with my friend, Mickey Fulp, the mercenary geologist. And Mickey, we didn't really get a full catch-up at Beaver Creek. We talked a little bit, but I don't think it was a full catch-up. So first things first, how did you think the show went at Beaver Creek? What were your takeaways from that event?
Well, I think it went swimmingly once again. There was lots of appetite for deals. There were deals announced. We've seen, I think, a trend of spin-outs and RTOs and companies that are rebooting, restarting new deals. So it seems to me that this time of year is a very good time to have a conference like Beaver Creek. You know, there was 1,000 people that attended. They cut the registration off at 1,000. And besides the companies that were there and the institutions, everybody had to be, else was a high net worth investor, a qualified investor. So it's a bit of who's who in the gold mining business, or let's say the exploration and mining business.
But that being said, Mickey, I mean, one thing that we were talking about there at the show was how, I mean, there's other than just a couple juniors who are seeing dramatic rises in their share price with limited news. You know, given that, some people would say, well, the market is, or companies are being rewarded for drill results. But then you pointed out it's extremely concentrated within a few companies, and it's extremely speculative at this point. So just give me some more thoughts on that and what that means exactly for the rest of the sector. It just seems like outside of a small group, not much of the sector is getting a lot of love here.
Well, your point's well taken here, Jordan. Other than a couple of tulip bulb companies that have gone exponential based on nothing more than surface sampling, and they haven't even drilled yet. And we know what happens when companies go exponential. They will go parabolic. It's not industry-wide. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that the only interest in the market is coming from professional investors. We don't see large volumes. We don't see retail participation, especially on the Toronto Venture Exchange at this juncture. But certainly the pros were at Beaver Creek, and the enthusiasm was palpable, I thought.
Yeah, so let's turn and talk about, I want to get your thoughts on a little bit of disparity between gold and copper. It's just something, I mean, not many people are talking about it. It's not that big of a disparity, but what I'm looking at here is gold had a good year so far, but it was not able to make a new high. So gold has not made a new high in over a year. Meanwhile, copper, since the January 2016 bottom, below $2 a pound. I mean, that's had a nice steady rise. It's had several higher highs, and I commend you on that, because you know, in the last several years, you were saying you were bullish on copper. Not many people were talking about copper, and that's had a really good rise. So what do you make of copper being stronger than gold?
Well, I think it depends on your time frame. So let's look back a year when gold was at a high that, as you say, has still not been reached this year. It hit was in about 1370, I think, maybe intraday at one point. But it's not performed very well since then. It took a big haircut post Beaver Creek last year and went from 1356 or thereabouts in by the end of the year, it was down to 1180, if memory serves. Meanwhile, you know, a year ago, copper was mucking around in the low $2 range, and it started to gain some traction just before the election, but it had a 17% rise in 2016. But compare it to all the other metals, zinc had a 58% or 60% rise last year. So it was kind of a no-brainer for me looking in the near term even to say, hey, copper's got to break out this year, which it has. And it hit a significant high about almost 3-year high. Hit almost a 3-year high at 314.
That's looking at the chart. Yeah, that's exactly correct. It's depending on which day, it's very clear. It's very close to a 3-year high. That recent peak just below 320.
Yeah, it was. It had a closing high of 312. It had an intraday high of 314, a day or two after Labor Day. But it had run up so quickly that it got way ahead of itself, and everybody was on the long. All the specs were on the long side of the trade, and when all the specs get on one side, you know it's not sustainable. So much like. Well, the longs got handed their shorts, in so many words. But if you look at a chart of gold over the last 60 days, and you look at the chart of copper over the last 60 days, they're the same. You know, we've had this big run-up in gold since July 7th. It hit an intraday low, I think, of 1212, and it surged up to 1349. Now, then it's dropped down back down into the mid 1270s after actually being at 1268 yesterday, I think, briefly. But copper's done much the same thing. The only difference is copper is now stabilizing. Copper hit that 314 in a couple of days. It dropped down to 302 and then below $3. The feeling is it needs to consolidate, which it has been consolidating for the last couple of weeks here in this low 1290 range or 290 range, and I think that's healthy for the market. If you look at the futures curve, the 3-month futures for copper is at compared to cash price, today's cash price is at 2 or 3 year highs, so that bodes very well for copper. The forward curve looks very strong, and you know, the all-in cost of producing a pound of copper in the world, I would dare say, all-in, and that's not cash costs, that's not all sustaining costs, that's the actual price it takes the company to produce a pound of copper, including CapEx and depreciation, amortization at all, is probably at $2.75. And so we need that $3 copper price for companies to continue production and not shut down mines. So, you know, you want to be in the lowest quartile, especially of the copper business.
So let's delve into the companies, the gold and copper companies, a little bit. Are you finding more opportunity in one metal or the other with respect to the companies, or do you just kind of look at the company itself rather than focusing on the metal? I mean, how do you look at gold and copper with respect to the investment opportunities that you're finding?
Well, I look at both metals as target metals for me. I have four target metals at this stage. It would be, and not any particular order, gold, copper, zinc, and uranium. Probably uranium down on the end because it's a far out thing, but I have done a uranium company this year. I'm finding many more opportunities in gold space, and we saw that in Beaver Creek with a new the new issuers that are scheduled to come out here in the next couple of months. And, you know, I'm an American and I like American projects. And I think a lot of this is probably driven in part by, well, number one, the rule of law and low geopolitical risk, but the Trump administration and it's a can-do Department of Interior bureaucracy now versus can't-do that we saw for 8 years of Obama. So that certainly has helped. Answer your question, seeing a lot more opportunities that are attractive to me in gold space. It's hard to find a good copper company. I have one. I'd like to find some more, but I don't even have a short list for that right now.
Right. Now, do you want to mention one or two of the companies that you're looking at? Or, I mean, is there anything there that you want to share with the audience?
Well, I can tell you the companies I'm involved with and cover at this particular stage, so I'm a shareholder too. My copper company, and it's really a polymetallic company, but really dominated by copper, is Trilogy Metals on the New York Market Exchange, also listed on the Toronto Big Board. It doesn't trade very much in Toronto. It controls the Ambler District of Northwest Alaska, pardon me, with arguably the two best undeveloped high-grade copper deposits in the world, in my opinion. In zinc space, I'm involved with Hannon Metals, a relatively new zinc play in Ireland. Note that zinc had a 10-year high today. Right now it's sitting at $1.52 and change. Of course, when you have zinc, you also have lead, and lead hit a multi-year high yesterday at $1.18. It's dropped off a couple of pennies today. So those are the companies I'm involved with in copper and zinc space. And as we speak, I am positioning with a couple of companies in gold space at this stage. I don't cover anybody in the gold sector, but it's coming.
No, I mean, as far as when you're saying it's coming, are these just value opportunities? Are they private placement opportunities? I mean, as an investor, yeah, what's your?
They're private placement opportunities at this stage. You know, either spin-outs, RTOs, new companies with management successful in the past, et cetera. So I'm just really not at liberty to discuss those right now because the deals have not been consummated. They've been announced, and until, you know, I'm able to, until these private placements are done and signed, sealed, and delivered, and deals done. It you know, it's just really something I can't talk about. But realize that I'm lurking around the corner in gold space and anticipate, assuming the price doesn't fall off the shelf and these deals don't get consummated, which I'll have to tell you is exactly what happened a year ago post Beaver Creek. I've got to keep this stuff under my hat at this particular time.
No, I completely understand. I don't want you to give away the whole farm. So it seems like what you're saying is that money in the junior sector for the people who are involved in it, it's flowing around. Some deals are coming to fruition, and that will continue to happen as long as the price doesn't fall off. But just that there hasn't been any real retail participation or generalist participation yet.
I would say that's exactly right. And, you know, the price of gold has been curious to me. You know, it broke resistance at that 1300, which it had butted up against a couple of times and soared upward, and then all of a sudden it gets taken right back down, went below 1280, as we said, broke resistance there. I don't know, you're a technical guy, and I'm not sure what you see, but you know, it's you saw this sawtooth pattern up for a couple of months, and now we've seen an identical sawtooth pattern down. And I would have to comment that it's pretty strongly correlated. The dollar index and gold inversely correlated, which is the usual paradigm. But let me give you some numbers, and I think you're probably aware, and some listeners will be aware, that we do daily correlation coefficients between the dollar and oil and dollar and gold and some other stuff. 20-day gold dollar correlation, negative 0.77. That's pretty strong. 50-day, negative 0.85. 100-day, negative 0.7. 200-day, negative 0.76. So I'm especially impressed by the 50-day of negative 0.85, with one being perfect. So what we've seen lately, when the dollar goes up, the price of gold goes down, and vice versa. And, you know, generally, Labor Day to mid-October, and here I'm going to pull my seasonality thing on you again, that is usually the strongest uptick of the year, the strongest sustained uptick of the year for the gold price, driven largely by Indian wedding and festival season. And we haven't seen that this year. And that's despite the aforementioned Indian demand, and ETF demand is strong also. So I don't know. Should we start talking about a precious metal summit curse the way we do a PDAC curse? I don't think so. But we've seen the same pattern the last 2 years, and it's somewhat of an unusual pattern.
Yeah, I think I mentioned that to you.
Kidding aside,
I mentioned that to you in the past. But yeah, looking at the gold chart, that is something I have noticed. We haven't seen. I mean, you go back to last year, strong correction after the show. 2015, there was a little bit of strength in September, October. 2014, yeah, it was another bad time before and after the show. So yeah, I think lately there's been more of a curse of Beaver Creek than a curse of PDAC.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't put that on the folks that put on Beaver Creek, because their timing seems to be impeccable for the conference. You know, it seems to be a time when, and that's according to seasonal demand, gold is on the uptick. We just had a couple of perturbations over the last couple of years. Now, last year was very odd, because gold hit its yearly high during the middle of the summer doldrums, when it should be at its yearly low. So I think we can throw 2016 out as an anomaly. But, I hope that that we see a little stronger gold price to keep this appetite going, because there's lots of good deal flow, and we want that to continue.
Right. Now, Mickey, I mean, you've been involved in this market for decades. What do you think it's going to, just stepping back to what we were talking about a couple minutes ago, what do you think it's going to take to get more of the retail money or the generalist money to come in? Is it a massive discovery? Is it time? Is it the gold price eclipsing, you know, getting to 1400 perhaps? I mean, what's your view on that?
Well, I wish I had an answer on that. I think we do need that psychological advantage of a $1,300 gold price. I talk to a couple of brokers all the time, and they're telling me they see more and more interest coming from American retail. And that makes sense, because on my board, the Dow, the NASDAQ, and the S&P 500 are all at record highs again today. So there's a lot of discretionary income that should be generated, and we need that trickle-down effect. I think there's been, as we've talk about these couple of tulip bulb companies, which I like to call them, that haven't drilled yet. And so, it doesn't take very much for, somebody goes into one of these companies and makes a bundle of money, and he tells his mechanic and he tells his barber, and pretty soon you get this flood of people coming in from the U.S., and that would certainly be welcomed.
Right. Now, Mickey, before we close, are there any I think you've mentioned a company or two. Is there anything else, maybe any other companies, I should say, that you'd like to mention that listeners could take a look at?
Well, I'll mention one other one. I'm involved in a company in uranium space called URZ Energy. I was a very early shareholder of a private company. I think I was a shareholder of that private company for 6 years before it made the acquisition that got it listed, and that's bought the Gas Hills project from Energy Fuels. We installed ex-Uraners management, which was previously successful in uranium space. So it's a very tightly held stock, doesn't have a lot of liquidity, but listeners might take a look at URZ Energy. Now, bear in mind, I've been in this stock a long time, so my cost basis is significantly lower than what it trades at this point.
Well, thank you for adding that, Mickey. It's very honest and transparent, like you always are. And
try to be.
Exactly. Now, before I let you go, Mickey, please tell our listeners where they can go to follow your work, how they can follow your work.
Yeah, I'm at mercenarygeologist.com. I run a sponsor model, so I have a free subscription service. If you want my stock picks, and sometimes when I pick a stock, it may move pretty quickly, you have to be a free email subscriber. All the other stuff is available just on the website. And got about 6,500 subscribers and about 64,000, approaching 64,000 Twitter followers at Mercenary Geo. We are quite active on Twitter. Have a lot of fun with the Twitter feed.
All right, Mickey, thanks so much for taking the time. I and my listeners really appreciate it. It was good to catch up with you in Beaver Creek. I hope to see you again soon, and maybe in the next month or two we can catch up and do another interview.
I look forward to that. My next appearance will be at the New Orleans Investment Conference at the end of this month or right before Halloween, I think. And it's always good because then you can stay a couple of days longer and witness Halloween on Bourbon Street. So it's a good conference. It's in its 43rd annual edition, and so maybe I'll see you there, Jordan.
Thank you for tuning into the Daily Gold Podcast. For more interviews, editorials, and analysis, log on to thedailygold.com. And for premium coverage of precious metals and the best junior mining companies, visit thedailygold.com/premium.